Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I mean, Chris, yeah, you're right. Dot watching. If we can find entertainment in dot watching somebody ride across Australia or the length of America, you'd think, yeah, enduro, ooh, we could watch that somehow.
I've been out for hours. I've done 2 days of this stuff.
I was just thinking this is like that Rich Energy thing. Hello and welcome to this week's Single Track World podcast. I'm Hannah, and in the studio with me we have, in alphabetical order...
Hang on, working it out. surname or first name?
Me, Ben G.
And me, Benjamin. Mark.
Smooth start, like hot off the start line there, which is totally appropriate because we're going to talk about racing. And we're all shit at the start line, aren't we? And the finish line comes to that.
And the middle bit as well for some of us, I guess.
Kind of welcome back, because we've had a bit of a break from our random chat over the summer because we've been on holidays and in some instances racing. So that was Benji. Benji had to step in, actually. I was supposed to be racing and then I removed my arm from my body. And so Benji had to go racing instead. And how was it, Benji?
Steep and not dry.
It Good did though. Actually look steep on camera, which is quite unusual. Like, normally you can watch like a downhill World Cup and go, oh, it's not that steep, I'd give that a go. And yeah, and then you realise it is steep, which makes me think that what you were riding was properly vertical.
Yeah, it was good. That's one of the reasons why it was up for doing it, really. Because like, you go to a lot of, it's just the naughty Northumbrian up in Northumbria. Don't even know where it was near, apart from nowhere. Hadrian's Wall. Really good. Good tracks, really. It's like you go to a lot of enduros and they aren't quite shallow a lot of the time. Particularly, I don't know, it's just the ones I attend. And then I don't think I've ever done an enduro that wasn't muddy. Like a shallow, muddy enduro. I've just had enough of those. So a steep, ridiculous one that's also wet was all right, really.
I edited those videos. I say videos because there's a suite of three videos coming up. I don't think, and they might be out when this podcast comes out. We don't know. I edited a ride that I did in Whistler on a famous trail over there. Hopefully some of our listeners will know about it. It's called Top of the World Trail. It goes from the very summit of Whistler Mountain all the way down to the valley. And it is super tech and in places super, super steep. And I was editing it and I was looking at it and going, I think it looks steep. It looks steep on this thing. Yeah. Oh, the camera really does make steep trails look shallow. And then I edited yours, Ben, and it looked steep on the video. When people see it, you can see how steep it is. So it must have been vertical, literally, in places. Mm-hmm. It looked nuts.
Yeah. I was surprised how many. It was good, actually, because it was like, I was impressed at the level of riding of that many hundreds of people. It was because they weren't pros or anything like that. It was like, oh, it's good that people are actually, I think their general level of riding was quite a lot higher than I'd seen it before, really. But that, I don't know whether the people knew it was like that, or, but it was good. Particularly with such a mixed field, where no one was on ridiculous bikes. We were all on bikes that you'd be out on the weekend.
What would constitute a ridiculous bike?
Just so you know, like bike park bikes, or really over bikes that don't really like to go along or uphill. They're all on pretty good.
Well, that's the thing about enduro,
normal
isn't
bike,
it?
Really.
It's you've got to have. You can't have a downhill bike. Well, you can, but you'll suffer on the stages, because how long were the stages between stages? How long were the
transfers?
What do they call them? Transfers. That's it.
Yeah,
that's
well, the whole day, full day, full lap was going to be, I think it said 40k, but that, I mean, if you looked at the map, that didn't include getting to the edge of the map. So I think it was about 50k a day. You're supposed to do it on Saturday
as a bike
practice,
yeah,
inverted commas, and then do the actual event on the Sunday. So it was like,
so was there like mandatory ride the whole thing slowly on Saturday?
Yes.
Okay, and then they raced it on the Sunday.
They preferred, there was like, practice was compulsory, I think, but do I spoil anything by saying I wasn't the only one who bailed after three because they were freezing cold.
Right.
It's bank like, holiday weekend, of course.
At what point, it's like, I get the idea, it's going to be hard and technical, which I guess is kind of the point of the practice, so I'm fine, don't worry, I'm not going to go home. I've done the ones that I knew were the steepest and hardest ones, but I'm now not going to kill myself on the practice day. And not necessarily, just like, I just be, won't be able to do it the day after.
So that kind of fits into the amateur world of enduro and what state is it in? Like, what do you get for your money from entering a race? And there's lots of people that say that entering a downhill race is really poor quality, poor value, because you get sort of a few runs on the Saturday and then you get even fewer runs on the Sunday, and then you go home with a bike that has broken bits on it. That's an expensive weekend out. And enduro kind of traditionally was a bit more of a ride with your mates, bit of a party in the field, kind of go camping, and hopefully by the end of it, you've got enough miles per pound to make it feel worthwhile. Now, you had a lot of miles per pound because you had to ride on the Saturday, like basically the whole thing, and again on the Sunday. But that seems like quite an intense weekend, like not a, oh, let's have a ride and a party Saturday night. It seems like by Sunday you'd be broken.
I don't think any racing is good value for money, is it?
Oof.
Like XC racing's the same, isn't it? What's that, like an hour? What's that one? Amanda did, it was about 15 minutes. Really?
There's different sorts of, yeah.
But it's not, you're not paying for the yard, you're paying for, the race format. That's
yes.
That's where all the money is. That's stuff.
And Naughty Northumbrian's on tracks you can't normally ride, isn't it? It's not like you're going to go and race around, I don't know, a trail centre.
None of them are rights of way of any status, I don't think. So, and they're all in nominal, I don't know if it's Forestry Commission, I don't even know if that exists anymore, but they're, it's yes and no. I don't really know. It's one of those grey areas, isn't it?
A 50-kilometre loop doesn't sound conducive to spectatoring.
No.
So it's, we were talking about this earlier. This, so we, enduro is definitely one of those race formats that's for the racers. It's a participation event, isn't it? It's not really a spectator sport.
Which makes it a tough like gig for a family weekend away. That, I guess that's where things like Tweedlove and stuff, they've got an expo in the field and there's stuff to do while everybody else is out racing and slogging around. And Ardrock as well does the same thing, doesn't it?
Same.
It's kind of a festival. with some races attached.
I think Enduro probably has, I don't know, I've never really done any other, I've done downhill racing a bit. None of it's good for spectators, is it? I mean, it's, apart from high level, dragging people along to these things, it's like, it's like,
well, this is a good point for me to play a clip that people who've watched the video, if you know, of you doing the Northumbrian, won't actually see because it's a bit of an outtake.
I didn't win.
Yes, it's. I'm going to play it now, and then I want to just. I think it brings. It's funny. It brings up a good point, though. So, let's just listen to this.
I did video coming into the end because I thought, well, I'm like, here's an ending.
Yep.
Deeply, like they always are at these things. No, it f***ing even looks at you. See, I've been out for hours, done 2 days of this stuff, expecting at least some kind of guy to. I just come in here, do I? It's total silence and hand in my dibber and then go home. Get a little receipt. I've been to f***ing Aldi.
So, how are we going to finish?
I didn't record my third stage, but Dad, I didn't really care about that point. What about that?
Yeah, so I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? It's you've done all that racing, you've been out for hours, you've frozen yourself, yeah, you know, and you badly blistered your foot, didn't you?
Oh God, both of them, yeah.
Yeah, and then you come in at the end, and you've achieved all of that, and you just roll into the finish, and there's no one there, and you get, what did you say? You got a little receipt like you'd been shopping at Aldi. This is kind of common.
I've lost it as well.
My racing career, in inverted commas, does span nearly 30 years. And I remember many events like that, many a cross-country race where you just cross the line and there's no one there. And you're thinking, where's the big finish? Where's the cheers? I mean, I remember the 24-hour racing, Mountain Mayhem. One of the things that Pat Adams, the organiser, always did was when the hooter went at the end and everybody came out from lurking and flooded across the line, he always stood on the line to shake the hands of as many of the riders as he possibly could as they came in. And I think it was kind of, it was a little thing, but it kind of made the ending special. Do you think there's races like the Northumbrian, I can't even say it. Do you think they could actually learn a thing or two from stuff like that? Do you think the finishes of races needs a bit of attention? I've been to races, the worst thing actually, rather than coming in and getting an Aldi ticket at the end, the worst thing is you come through the finish line and they're already taking the course down around you.
So I think there's a whole cultural thing among the riders as well as the organisers at this point. Because I used to do fell running, which is very similar in that you disappear off across the moors and you come back really cold and wet. And you're probably finishing in some kind of community hall, if you're lucky, a church hall or something that doesn't have any heating. But there, everyone sticks around for the finish. So the last person across the line is being cheered across the line by the first person who might well run for the country. And then the prizes are worth shit all. Like, literally, there's a race that's famous for giving out things like rolls of toilet roll and tins of beans as the prizes. But people stick around for the prize giving. And there are spot prizes that are just handed out at random to random numbers or different age categories, whatever. So it's not, people don't stick around for the prize giving because they think they're going to win something amazing. They stick around for it because it's fun. It's a whole cultural thing that it's bad form to just go home. So even people that have like sprained their ankle and dropped out, they'll be sitting there having a cup of crap tea or whatever.
Was there a presentation at the Naughty North? I can't say it. Naughty Northumbrian. Right, I got it now. Was there a prize presentation?
Hmm?
Did you go?
Nope.
Well, so I just don't believe that.
Why? Because I'd had to go home as soon as possible.
But I don't believe the mountain bikers are any colder and wetter than fell runners that are coming back.
I think a lot of it's to do with having a bike to deal with, in a practical sense. You've got to kind of sort your bike out. By the time you've done all that, it's like, it's not just hanging around, is it? You've got to deal with that expensive shit-up thing.
I don't know.
But so, what's the solution here? What should organisers do at the end of an enduro?
I'm not complaining about Northumbria. It was absolutely well good. All the tracks were amazing. I can't believe it's legal. Like how hard and sketchy it was. That's brilliant. And well done for doing it. It's just like, you know, it's anyone to do with bikes is probably not going to be entirely of the.
Is it mountain bikers' fault?
Socially enthusiastic end of the spectrum, aren't we? We're all going to be fucking weirdo, most of us solitary bods. That's why we cycle. Isn't it?
Yeah, we do. We ride bikes to be alone.
There's a lot of aspect of that, isn't there? You don't ride bikes to be social.
We ride bikes because we're loners and we want to be on our own.
So yeah, a lot of it, isn't it? That's how you get into it. It's you want to roam around where you grew up.
Right. Okay.
Maybe the team element makes the difference because in fell races, quite often there's a team prize or a number of team prizes, and you need so many people to be completing the race to, like, maybe if it's five people have to cross the line, that actually that last slow person matters because that makes the difference between you getting a team prize and being eligible and not. And we don't have clubs, so we don't have teams, so. We don't have team prizes. We don't like each other, so we don't join clubs.
Yeah, so maybe the solution is event organisers need to go do some fell running races and see what they can do. Or just we just accept the fact that as mountain bikers, we're just not sociable and we're never going to hang around at the end and start clapping strangers. It's a bit like going to a graduation and having to clap other people's kids get degrees, isn't it? You know, it's like, oh my God, this is going to go on for an hour and a half. I always feel sorry for the kid, the graduation kids who have come in at the end of the alphabet, because that's at the end of the hour and a half and people are just doing this thing.
But there's, for events to survive, there's got to be something in it, hasn't it? So you've either got to cross the finish line and think, bloody hell, that was great, and I got to ride a route that I wouldn't have otherwise got to ride. Like, you've got to finish feeling good about where you're placed or the ride that you've had. Or through the course of the weekend, there's got to be like a great chance to hang out with your mates and a band on the Saturday night or whatever. Like, there's got to be something in it. Otherwise, people aren't going to turn up. They're not going to pre-book. They're not going to buy tickets. And then we won't have any events.
Does any level of... Well, we're going to talk about this in a minute, are we? Does any level of enduro racing sell... product?
Good question, and we'll come straight back to that after this break.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
So you could, though, like, you could design courses, couldn't you, so that they had good viewing spots for spectators. Like cyclocross kind of does that, and cross-country to some extent does that, where the courses kind of go off and then come back in and there's a bit where you hope people might fall off in front of you.
Let's just rewind a minute, because, and just put the context here for the listeners. We were talking before about whether EWS is a thing anymore. Of course, it is a thing. It's happening. But we haven't heard anything this year about stuff that's going on with the EWS. It's all been downhill. So we were just wondering whether, you know, is this the end for EWS? Is it going to fizzle out now that downhill's got more... Has it got more prominence this year?
Well,
it's gone behind a paywall for a start, but...
This could apply to any enduro where, like, if you had your family sitting in the field and in the different stages kind of passed within walking distance every now and again, they could jeer at you and watch your gradual deterioration or something. And
well, there's two issues.
More of a spectator sport, wouldn't it?
There's two issues. There's that, which is, you know, for the general day-to-day competitor in EWS events and of actually making it what we were talking about before, making it a kind of an event and a festival and a worthwhile going. But there's the other thing is the pro side of it. EWS is a pro event. Has that got a future? It seems to, it's sort of PR levels this year seem to have dropped off a cliff.
Yeah, in terms of people putting money into, what do you call it, elite level? Elite level
yeah.
International racing will want either and coverage or prestige. And I don't, doesn't feel like anyone is that bothered in terms of us, not us, as it, the audience. I don't know whether the audience is there anymore.
Yeah.
I think we've had it.
It's difficult to get an audience in enduro racing, isn't it? Because this is the thing. It's very much a participation sport. You know, when you're going out, like you did the Naughty Northumbria and you did like a 50-kilometre loop, you can't build spectators or even coverage into that very easily.
Well, it doesn't seem like... they've either done... What are they called, the organisers? Is it ESO?
ESO.
Or is that some kind of band?
ESO.
Right. ESO. So, doesn't feel like they've even done the same level of coverage as they used to, let alone made it better. They've actually probably done worse, in inverted commas, coverage than they've ever done before, because they spread too thin, or they're now concentrating on their Halo event, which is downhill, and probably, well, is XC as well, isn't it? For Euro eyes, particularly. So well, it's like you could cover enduro better because even they've covered it better than they have done this year.
Yeah,
but it's not about live coverage; it's about build up and track previews and GoPros and POVs and bike checks and interviews and stuff. You don't have to; it doesn't have to be on the day streamed coverage. It's just even the before and after content has been absent.
Yes,
and you know that there's going to be half a dozen steep stages that are going to be trickier, or corners where it's going to deteriorate and people are going to fall off, whatever. Like, it doesn't seem like beyond the realms of possibility to have somebody sat there with a drone or a GoPro attached to a tree or something, you know, like one of those animal trail camera things that captures wildlife when it senses motion. Like, oh, here's a rider. Yeah, you got that one. Like, you know, and get that stuff after the event, even. Yeah. Like, that would be better than
autumn
nothing.
Watch. Enduro watch. Just have GoPros in forests.
So, or some on camera, like, you know, things attached to their helmets. I mean, fair enough, you're not going to have hours and hours and hours of footage, but you've got timed stages, like, here, hand this over, magnetic DJI thing that attaches on, bang, at the top of the stage. There you go, get to the bottom, hand it over.
Yeah.
Well, it's all predicated on timing chips and things. And sometimes even the sort of transcontinental races are quite exciting because you can track the riders. Maybe there's a live feed thing that they could do with enduro, so you could track the riders crossing finish lines and see all the times jiggle around.
I mean, Chris, you're right. Dot watching. If we can find entertainment in dot watching somebody ride across Australia or the length of America, you'd think, enduro. Ooh, we could watch that somehow.
Maybe it's a casualty of the fact that for some strange reason, cross-country racing has suddenly has become interesting to watch.
Well, that's because they've made it as gnarly as enduro, isn't
it? Absolutely, yeah. The courses are brilliant. The courses are more compact. You can cover the courses. Things happen now. I mean, Benji, you remember this from racing in the early days. You know, watching cross-country racing was the worst thing in the world to watch because people would set off on like a 10-mile loop, and anybody who was there to watch the racing, two things would happen. One, the whole pack would disappear, and then you'd go and get a brew if you were watching and do something for half an hour before the first riders came through and you saw them just whiz past. But then also with old-fashioned cross-country racing is that you could look 200 yards down the course from the start, and whoever was at the front after 200 yards, they would win. Five laps later, they were the winner.
And
there was never tight racing, and now
if
there
you
is.
Weren't there, it's more about. I mean, the industry doesn't care who's watching it on the side of the tape at all. They want to know who's watching it on telly or phone, don't they? Because that's X numerous times more. And I think the something had to be done when it got in the Olympics. It was televised, and oh my god, like the first a lot of Olympics up to and including London were just like, this doesn't even look like it's.
It didn't even look hard.
Like a hobby. So yeah. What is this? It looks really slow and like not. There was no. No one could tell how difficult either physically or whatever the thing was. It just looked like there's people. The racing ground field.
Yeah, and 10 you're miles right. An hour. Whoever was leading at the end of the first lap was the winner, and they just opened that gap up, and it just became boring to watch. But when you compare it to the World Champs that's just happened up in Scotland. And especially the Tom Pidcock in the short course, wasn't it? The short course racing, I think, is absolutely marvellous. And you had drama, you had tight finishes, you had sprint finishes, and then you had Tom Pidcock sort of knocking off the third place rider. Who was that? He practically decked by running on the inside of him and stole third. I say that, it was racing, and he didn't do anything wrong, did Tom? He won fair and square. But there was excitement. There was something there that was, because it was close. It's never been that close in the history of cross-country racing. It's always
I think the audience, the people who are watching that on GCN or Eurosport, will now be of the opinion that Pinarello's are the best bike.
Mm.
God help us.
You must it's just everyone downhill, isn't it? Everyone thinks the V10's really good or the demo's really good.
You imagine how many people are going to have really miserable introductions to mountain biking having bought a Pinarello, like this razor?
No, yes
Did
and no.
Say
because
that?
Because the people who buy that bike are going to fucking love it because they're just going to hammer Schottenfesten fire roads in Switzerland all day long and it'll be absolutely brilliant.
Oh, for fire roads? Yeah, no, I was just thinking more about people buying a Pinarello. And then, you know, going from road to, like, bike park Wales or something. It's just been the most traumatic experience and the bike will go back in the shed and that'll be it.
Sorry, Pinarello. Sorry.
It's because it's a tool. It's a knife. It's a razor. It's a tool for a specific purpose. Mm-hmm. It's not for your general punter to go and roll around.
But this is what events...
Barry spots it down in the south. Yeah.
As much as nobody likes marketing, this is what actually makes events successful, isn't it? It's this, you know, it's the fact that you can see what they're riding and there's the coverage of the bikes and this sort of thing. You don't get any of that with EWS. And maybe...
Well, it started... EWS, in the beginning, did not have a massive media behemoth behind it and footage and all the rest of it. And yet, it still managed to create...
Electrician.
Coverage. Okay. Well, do you need to let him in?
I'll be a few minutes.
That's all right. We'll just chat amongst ourselves and you can laugh at the outtakes. Okay, we're back. We had a brief interruption there because Mark's electricity got turned off. And
sorry about that.
We're not quite sure where we're at, what we were talking about. Obviously, it was scintillating.
I'm 55 quid down.
Oh,
anyway, what were we talking about before?
Well, so I think we were talking about coverage of events and that Enduro was hard to make good to follow or watch or a spectator sport. And we'd said that dot watching is a thing. So it's not just in the having fancy camera angles or whatever. And I think I was about to say that back in the beginning of Enduro, it became a thing without a behemoth of media behind it. Like, they managed it then. So the fact that it's dying a death now, it must be down to a little bit more than technical coverage. Maybe it's down to shouting about it in the right way or making it sound interesting or telling stories.
And, so we're all in agreement then that EWS is dying.
Well, there's been, like, no song and dance made about it this year under the kind of new structure, and there seems to be a bunch of teams saying that they're not going to be in it next year or they're restructuring or something's going on there.
And but we don't think that's really... That's not necessary. Well, we don't think that's just down to EWS, do we? We've heard rumours about other things.
Well, other so teams. It might just be the state of the bike industry generally and starting to cut their cloth a little bit. But there is a rumour going around that the Enduro is going to become electric only.
Ooh, controversial.
Now, this is a rumour that I have read off rumours on rumours on rumours. So I don't have any inside journo knowledge here, I should point out.
For those listeners who can't see the video that we're watching at the moment, Ben's eyebrows just went right up when you said that.
I don't know.
So,
just, I don't know. It's hard to know whether I haven't experienced much enduro coverage this season because I haven't looked for any, because I'm no longer that arsed.
But you're a big enduro rider now. After Naughty Northumbrian, it, said it right that time.
Well, no, I was thinking about this a few minutes ago. It's like, it's not that it's a partially, it's because it's participation is the main reason why the event exists as opposed to results and spectating. I'm not really sure international enduro really works. Feels like it's a... not local, but I think once you've gone beyond kind of a little regional area,
yeah,
it's quite, it doesn't, don't know whether it really scales up, I suppose is the phrase, because otherwise it just feels like it's falling short of being downhill.
Yeah, I mean, it is rally driving, but on a mountain bike, isn't it? And the thing is, car rallying's really exciting to watch because they've got cameras in the cars and spectators who stand way too close on corners. So it's hard to see how they could make it exciting. But then if they're not and there's teams pulling out, maybe it's just going to fall back. It's just going
to
be...
just to scale it down, aren't they? It'll have to just...
Grassroots racing.
You can still have UCI events. Isn't there... what's it called where they spin round on bikes?
The dancing thing.
Yeah, that's a UCI event, isn't it?
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be, it's just, I don't think it can be, as it turns out, it doesn't look like it can be as big as they may want the two main genres of mountain biking to be.
But maybe it doesn't scale up as well because it kind of works if you're more of a privateer and you pack your bike up and your bag up and you've got to maintain your own bike. And you sleep in the back of a van or in a tent or on someone's floor or whatever. And it's sort of semi-professional-ish kind of thing. But then once you scale it up to teams and pits and a pro mechanic that follows you around and advertising and banners and all of that sort of stuff, suddenly it's not just somebody getting on a plane. It's a whole plane full of people getting on a plane and the expense of that is kind of exponential, isn't it? I mean, it works for DH, but then you can have the coverage.
That's it. And without the coverage, you can't see as a team where you're going to get the payback. Where's the return on that investment going to come from if no one's actually following it, no one's actually watching it? It just seems to be a bit flawed in that respect.
Then again, our very own Matt Letch pioneered, I was reading the other day, race coverage like of the Trans-Provence, live race coverage, where they would have, by the end of the day, photos and a race report from each stage sent out to all the journo publications on some kind of crazy dial-up. You know, this was before the internet was fast, from a village in the remote part of France. Now, if you can create hype and coverage of something in that situation, you should be able to do it in the modern day and create something that makes at least a small team worthwhile. You know, maybe they're like a gang of privateers that are all happen to be riding the same brand of bikes rather than a full on, like, we've got team support and the masseurs that comes with us and all of that shizzle.
That's a very good point. The Trans-Provence was well represented from a media point of view, wasn't it? From the information that came out of it to us. It was free flowing. It was good.
And it does need to be like that. Like, we do not have hours of the day to put news reports together. So it kind of needs to come in as, here's a gallery of pictures and here's some text and you can copy and paste and drop them in. Now, that is definitely not what we're getting. We're getting something that's more like a newsletter.
I think the Transfer Bombs had a lot of money behind it from Mavic, followed by Santa Cruz. It wasn't like it was done out of the keenness of racing or someone was particularly doing it for the love. They had a lot of money behind it. And once that was realised, not a lot of money coming back. Pulled the plug. And now it's become Santa Cruz Stone King.
Yeah. Well, but that's kind of interesting, isn't it? Because that's the brands sponsoring the event and getting the coverage for themselves out of it. Now, this is ESO, Discovery, whatever, covering an event and giving other brands coverage out of it rather than themselves. Like,
and the people who pay for the cameras and the coverage are... People always ask, like, why are they protected riders? Because it's the protected teams who pay six-figure sums or whatever to keep the whole thing rolling. That's why we have protected riders. It's not fair, because if we didn't have those, there wouldn't be an event. And I don't think there are that many. I don't really know about the money involved in Enduro, but the teams can't be paying that much to take part. And they just, if there's no money in like anything in this terribly unfair world, if there's no money, it doesn't happen.
Yeah. So who's pulling out of downhill?
I don't know about downhill, actually. I think
confirmed
Enduro is... I can't remember Ibis. Is that right or something?
So there's rumour and further rumour and conjecture as well. I think DaVinci has definitely said they're not doing Enduro in the current formats. That's the bin men outside doing the recycling. Sorry about that. So... DaVinci's like issued a statement. GT seems to be broadly and widely accepted that they're not doing Enduro. And Katie Winton hasn't got a ride for next year, for example. And she's potentially retiring, I think. And then Dan Wolf has retired from Enduro from Polygon, which has made people wonder whether Polygon's going to do it again next year, or whether it's just him retiring. Ibis, I'm not quite sure. That I haven't seen anything like official from Ibis. I haven't found anything official, but that seems to be accepted that they're not going to be enduroing, certainly in the current format. But what's to say that some of these brands aren't going to do the American Enduro series or whatever, which is a massive spectator sport? Like, there's a bunch of like local-ish, like I guess their equivalent of PMBA or whatever. And it is a massive party in the woods. People go and spectate and they film bits and they share clips and it's all over Instagram. Like, there's an expo with it. So maybe some brands aren't going to do the EWS, but they will carry on doing gravity events within the States or New Zealand or whatever.
Interesting stuff.
So, but rumours from downhill seem to be lots of discontent in the pits and quite a lot of uncertainty
about... What's the discontent about?
I think inconsistency in events. Like, you turn up and you don't know what your pit space is going to be like and what the infrastructure is going to be like, and one time it's brilliant and the next time it's terrible. And
the overall arching concern appears to be a lack of communication. It's about everything, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's all they're moaning about, really, whether it's just the fact they don't know what's going on. And that's been like that since the get-go, hasn't it? Remember at this time last year?
We didn't know what was happening.
Like, is there even any room? Is it going to happen? Yes. Can we have some info? Where is it? It just feels like the people behind it might have been currently being stretched gossamer thin. It'll depend whether how many people signed up per month to GCN and Eurosport, won't it, to see whether it's any better next year.
Well, and I imagine that there's a big shuffling of envelopes going on within that whole like company structure, given that they seem to be, what is it, $10 million in the hole or something. I can imagine that the people that are actually on the ground who riders are communicating with quite possibly don't have answers and don't know what's coming and are still arguing for funding for this or that the next year.
And I don't think it's a secret to say that actually we can, more rumours that are actually slightly more fact than rumour, but GCN itself is kind of on the market. It's up for sale. And there's a few interested parties out there vying, well, maybe looking into acquiring it, and whether the new owners, whether they continue with the expense of sponsoring downhill coverage and all the rest of it, who knows? So, yeah, there's a bit of uncertainty floating around, isn't there?
I don't know about the structure of that. I don't know whether ESO is part of GCN or GCN is part of ESO. Do you know what I mean? Like where the hierarchy sits.
Well, GSN's where the coverage comes from. That's that's the organisation that's taken over from Red Bull in covering all the downhill. So it's all a bit uncertain at the moment.
Isn't it ultimately Warner Brothers?
Yes, yeah, down the line.
Yeah. I think we should bring back, was it Rocky Road? Do you remember that?
Rocky Road, oh, remember them. The website that suddenly...
The
website that popped briefly out of nowhere claiming millions of readers, and the UCI fell for it. And wow, that was that's a debacle. I bet the UCI would like to forget.
I'm too young to remember. Let's have a brief synopsis from you two aged folks.
Oh, mid-noughties, was it?
Whoever
was taking over. I think it was downhill only. Who's in charge? You run out of running the downhill World Cup, they put it out to tender. I don't really know.
That's right, yeah.
And then it was announced that the new organisers of the World Cup Downhill... It was a really long name, wasn't it?
Rocky Road. Website. Rocky Road was the website. And it was supposed to be a media website.
Yes.
It was, you know, full of reviews and all the rest, you know, content. And they went in with a pitch claiming that they had something like 5 million unique users a month coming to the website, which was patently and easily provably wrong. But the UCI went for it, and for 1 year, this website with no traffic.
There we go. Yeah, 2011.
No traffic suddenly became one of the largest sponsors of cycling in the world. It had parallels with what was that energy drink?
I was just thinking, that Rich Energy thing.
It was a bit Rich Energy like,
So was the whole thing a spoof or a scam? What happened?
No, basically Rocky, whoever was behind the Rocky Road brand and that, thought, look, if we can convince the UCI and get our foot in the door there, the traffic will come afterwards because we will be the sponsor. Whereas what they pitched to the UCI was, we can bring this audience to you. We have 5 million, which was a lie. We have all these viewers and readers, and we'll bring them to you, to the UCI. So there was this complete 180 degree campaign of, well, bullshit, really. So we had a Rocky Road sponsor, which was a website from nowhere.
It never happened, but it was going to be It was going to be the 2012 Rocky Roads UCI Mountain Bike World Cup presented by Shimano.
Did it actually happen? Were they the sponsor for the year?
I don't know what happened for 2012.
I think basically all became clear when everybody, including us, the rest of the media around the world went, wait, what? Who? Who are you? I think there was enough people going, who are these people, that I think the UCI and Shimano probably went, ah, right, yeah, we maybe should have done a little bit more due diligence before we said yes.
Well, it's another UCI casting themselves in glorious light, isn't it? I didn't know about that one.
They don't have a great pedigree, do they, UCI? Bless them. Oh, it must be so hard for them.
Well, so hard, perpetuating corruption.
Oh, steady on now. Steady on.
I don't know what happened in that. What happened as the
yeah? If any listeners out there can remember that far back, and you know, I guess tell us what happened.
Or knew the person behind Rocky Road.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, so is there a sustainable future for mountain bike elite racing? What would it look like? I wonder.
Well, it's really hard, isn't it? Because as we know from the GCN situation at the moment, they're 10 million in the hole. From a turnover, I think there's something like a turnover of 27 million and they are 10 million loss, something like that. Those are the numbers I seem to remember. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I mean the coverage, we've covered the coverage. You know, the coverage itself was news and we covered the coverage and said that it was pretty good. And, you know, it's not bad and it's a great start. But if it costs that much to put these things on, you've got to wonder, yeah, how is downhill going to survive beyond just grassroots? You know, if we're saying that enduro, it's undoubtedly it's a great format, it's brilliant to race, it's a great thing to participate in, so it's got a future. But whether it gets anything more than just grassroots, and you know, it's just there for the riders, not the sponsors, who knows? It doesn't look good at the moment, and maybe downhill's going to have its critical moment this year and next. It's going to be interesting to watch.
It's good. It's fortunate that the actual racing is probably the best it's ever been. Mm. And downhill, on both men's and women's, it's by far the best, particularly men's. Like, there's probably 12 people you could name quite quickly who could win any of them.
Yeah.
It's never been like that. It's always been like, someone's bound to win unless they crash or there's a freak result. There's not really a favourite anymore.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think my thoughts are,
the day.
I think because of that, because the racing is so good at the moment, I think whether it's GCN, whether they offload it, whether it's sold, you know, GCN sold and bought by somebody else, but I think, I feel in my bones that it will continue. There will be coverage. Whether it makes any money in the future, who knows? But there's so many things get bought by so many rich people that don't make money and fail. That, you know, there'll always be somebody along in a minute to buy it up.
And we don't really know whether it's a perfect storm of new organisers and the bike industry not having any money, or whether, you know, on their own, one or other issue would be enough to cause this level of, like, discontent and uncertainty. But I mean, Ibis, if it's true that Ibis is stopping doing enduro, they've only just made a new enduro bike. GT kind of makes sense because GT is now part of the whole Pond thing with Santa Cruz and Cannondale, and I think the Habit has been getting like good vibes all round, so maybe that becomes the enduro brand and GT is the BMX brand, I don't know, but the dirt jump brand.
Mm.
But if you've got a big house of bikes, you probably want to have some kind of distinction between the different brands.
Yeah.
What so, they're there for.
To summarise, there's a lot of uncertainty around racing at the moment, both downhill and enduro, but we think it's going to continue in some shape or form in the future. The brands value it, clearly. The ones who are probably bit grumpy at the moment and threatening to pull out, and not because it's worthless to them, just for other logistical reasons, you know, and organisational reasons. So I think there's every reason to be optimistic that we're still going to be watching downhill at an elite level next year. Whether we'll be watching, if anybody does even watch any kind of enduro, I'm less certain about that. I think enduro as a format is probably not going to be elite level. It's just going to be more grassroots. And that's great. I think that's absolutely fine. The fun in that event is doing it.
Mm. But I think what is concerning, though, is the kind of long-term future. Because by all accounts, it is almost impossible to be a privateer or a small team at the moment. And if you don't have that, then you don't have people coming through the ranks to be the next batch of riders. And Benji's saying the racing is great at the moment because there's loads of really good riders there. Mm. And we're going to have this gap where who takes over when other people are injured or retire.
Cool.
Like, yeah.
So anyway, listeners, what do you think? What's going to be the shape of mountain bike racing next year and into the future? Let us know. You can comment on this story if it's on the website and let us know.
Mm-hmm.
What else have we got to cover? Is that it?
Well, what have we got coming up? We've got Rampage announced, riders announced. Gee Atherton.
Gee's going to do Rampage. Oh, God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's a few people on there, a few people not on the list that people thought should be on the list. And that there are alternates and that sort of thing. So it'll be interesting to see that. There was a massive fight kicked off on the Red Bull Instagram over the fact that there's no women there. Again, no women on the invite list. And the cancelled formation this year. People saying that it's not moving with the times.
So, I've always felt uncomfortable about Rampage.
I think
it's kind of gladiatorial. It's a bit bloodthirsty. It's like bigger, harder, more risk every year. And at some point, I'm going to sound really old now, and I've said this before, at some point, someone's going to have a really nasty accident. Someone could die doing that. And I just wonder what will be the outcome when, or if, hopefully never happens, but if that happens, I think it could be transformational to that kind of event, because it is the health and safety just doesn't get a look in. It's just
it does, but yeah, riders are making choices.
But they're being encouraged to make those choices. They're being encouraged to go bigger, better, harder, higher, and I just think there's only so far you can go.
G seems to be managing to do that enough on his own. That video we published in the Dolomites. It was pretty like, I struggled to watch that more than I did the Rampage, to be honest.
It's unusual, the announcement of G having a go, isn't it? Because it's he doesn't do any tricks.
No.
So is this meaning it's going back? Is it deliberate hark back to just sketchy lines? Which is what I particularly was more interested in. But a lot of people do say, oh, it's just another slope style event, which it is.
Yes, yeah, it is. It's just gap jumping, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen G do anything, even like a tabletop.
Oh,
you'll get down anything.
And you do those all the time, don't you, Benji?
No, I've not signed up to Rampage, but what? It's a trick event, isn't it? Well, that's what it's turned into.
It has been more of a trick event, yeah. Well, although he's not so much of a tricker, and he was doing big stuff. Which is also,
that's why Seminook's not doing it, because I think there's going to be a big tricks squashing.
Oh, do you think?
Yeah. Mm.
Well, Seminook's not doing it because he's rally driving, isn't he?
No, he's doing it because there's no tricks and he's got rally driving to pretend he's doing. There's a reason why he's not doing that.
So
who the hell cares that Seminook does rally driving in rally driving circles? No one.
You think Rampage is going to like adjust the scoring so that it's all about how scary it was instead of how tricky it was?
Yeah. I always think that any event where you've got judges doing scores is dodgy. I mean, look at ice skating. Is that what mountain biking is going to become? Do they hold up cards with the scores on?
Don't know. Don't know what they're doing. Slope style things.
Yeah. They do it in snowboarding as well. They have these events in snowboarding where judges are just giving marks out of 10 for the tricks and stuff. Anyway.
Well, so I showed Rampage. Well, I was describing Rampage to friends who don't cycle, don't mountain bike the other day. But they've seen some of the local trails and jump spots and stuff. And so I was describing it and they were like, okay, oh, that sounds a bit dangerous. Like, backflip, really? Okay. And then I got my phone out and showed them some of the footage. And it was like watching somebody on a roller coaster. It was amazing. Like they were physically moving around, like their heads were sort of lolling and they're, whoa. Like they had no idea of the scale of it. So if anyone's listening, I highly recommend you have a watch party of Rampage with people who have no clue about cycling. Because watching them watch Rampage was amazing. And then I showed them Seminook's one take clip, and they were suitably impressed by that. So people that don't ride can appreciate that.
This is the birth of a new format. You know how you unashamedly stole Radio 4's Desert Island Discs.
Uh huh.
Maybe we steal Gogglebox, but we do it with Rampage. We get people to sit and then we film them watching Rampage. I would watch that.
I would watch your mum watching Rampage, Mark. I think that would be good value.
Yeah. Yeah, Mum, I've done that. I do that. Yeah, that's what I do. Not at all. Right, shall we wrap it up? I think we've covered quite a lot this week. Sorry about the electrician interruption earlier on.
Yeah, I'm sure it was all the more disjointed and nonsensical for the interruption, yeah.
I've got to go away and edit this now and make sense of everything that we've talked about.
It'll be fine.
It'll be good.
Yeah. Right. All right, then. Well, thanks, everyone, for joining us. And we're back for more of this in another week or so. All right.
Well, I bet it's about... Is it the awards special next one?
Oh, yeah. Watch out for the awards next week. Maybe. Yeah. We'll mention the awards next week anyway.
Good,
we'll talk about it.
Good interception there, Benji. Nice. Yeah. All right, folks.
Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.